This is a Rally Week in Review for December 8th, 2009. I'm James Turner, contributing editor to Rally Media, and I'll be your host as we look back at what's been going on over the past week, some upcoming events you may be interested in, a little bit of news, and maybe a little bit of silliness here or there. All this on a Rally Week in Review, the only podcast that will do odd jobs for theme music. Fellow O'Reilly editor Tim O'Brien recently sat down with the authors of the J. Ruby cookbook, Henry Liu and Justin Edelson. He talked to them about all things J. Ruby, and also asked how the Ruby and Java communities are getting along these days. Henry Liu responded.
When I used to go to the early New York City, NYC Ruby meetings, yeah, it was definitely a really interesting crowd because you had this one side of people in the room who were hardcore Ruby people and never wanted to know Java or learn it ever. And then you had people like myself who had, you know, years and years of Java experience dying to learn some new technology. And I think it's always been kind of an awkward match and not necessarily, a perfect kind of marriage in any way. But I don't know. I think that it takes, you know, I think JRuby is sort of that attempt to bridge that gap a little bit and try to have these kind of groups see eye to eye a little bit. But I can't honestly say that I see that much. You know, there isn't like this kumbaya moment where people are just holding hands and coming together. I think that the Ruby people still kind of tend to try to look for their solutions using the Ruby technology and writing their technologies in the Ruby code, using Java when absolutely necessary, but generally I think still, you know, looking toward Ruby-oriented solutions.
You can read or listen to more of the interview with Liu and Edelson by going to broadcast.o'reilly.com. A final verdict was recently announced in the SCO versus Novell lawsuit. To no one's big surprise, SCO was the big loser in the decision. But according to Groklaw's Pamela Jones, it's a little bit early to be breaking out the champagne. In an exclusive interview last week with O'Reilly News, she told us that SCO has already filed an appeal and that the process could continue to drag on for years. Please, can we just get this thing over with? Jones also talked about what the future could hold for Groklaw after the whole SCO mess is over, and also how she views her role at Groklaw as different from that of a traditional journalist. Again, you can read the full interview by going to broadcast.o'reilly.com. Got any plans for early February? If not, you might want to think about a trip to New York City. On February 4th through 6th, O'Reilly will be presenting Money Tech 2009. Money Tech is a conference that looks at how finance and technology intermingle and evolve together. You'll have an opportunity to hear speakers from such diverse groups as Yahoo, Barclays Bank, as well as leading analysts and academics. In these uncertain financial times, having a good view of what the future could bring to finance can't be a bad thing. You can expect to see interviews with some of the superstars of the conference showing up over the next few months on the O'Reilly Media site. Reaching into the O'Reilly archives, in October, we interviewed Dr. Andrew Weaver. Dr. Weaver served as one of the lead authors on the UN's Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change report. He also served as a consultant to the Discovery Channel during their Project Earth series. He looked at various schemes proposed to help with global warming and analyzed what their effect on the Earth's climate could be. He definitely thought that some of the ideas had merit, and there were a few that scared the pants off him.
Well, the most promising one, without a question, was the carbon scrubbers one. And I actually think that that's a good idea. Because, for example, the carbon scrubbers, what they did there is develop a mechanism to actually take carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere, take it out and store it and capture it. So that's you might argue that that's basically the inverse of what we've been doing as humans. As humans, we've been putting it in, and we could take it right back out. So to me, that makes a lot of sense there. Because it's not making or messing around with Mother Nature directly. It's kind of taking out the problem. Yeah, so I think that does have a lot of hope. And you might even imagine, for example, that being done in parallel with an airline industry, which I have a lot of difficulty thinking of off-the-shelf solutions for jet fuel. But you might imagine that you could capture something like that in with jet fuel and you might get somewhere. The scary one is putting these shiny mirrors in space. I mean, oh my goodness! I think that's that. You know, messing around with the amount of sunlight we have coming in from space is not something I want to be part, anything part of. So I don't think that, that was right. Again, you can imagine it being stuck on all these umbrellas, stuck on reflect mode, and suddenly we're reflecting solar radiation for back to space. Nah, let's not go there.
It's sad but true that we do have to pay the bills around here, so we'll remind you that in addition to the Ruby book we talked about earlier, we've also just recently published Sequel in a Nutshell, 3rd edition, and Real World Haskell. We're also about to publish Using Drupal. If you're interested in Drupal, we had a webcast last week featuring two authors of the book, Jeff Eaton and James Walker. You can play this webcast by going to webcasts.oreilly.com. While there, you can also see future webcasts that we have in the works. Maybe next time you can catch one live. We noted with some amusement recently that a member of Barack Obama's transition team that's looking at the role of the FCC, Kevin Werbach, is also a level 70 shaman on World of Warcraft named Supernovan Jenkins. Since it's possible that Werbach could end up as the chairman of the FCC, we couldn't help but wonder what it would be like to go up against him in World of Warcraft.
Okay, Jenkins, I got you now. You're pwned. Prepare to die!
Warning. Bandwidth degradation. Game performance may suffer.
What's going on? I can't control my character. Oh god, I can't block his spells!
Character dead. Respawning.
Important safety tip, kids. Don't go mano a mano in Warcraft with someone who can throttle your network connection down to 300 baud. Finally, it's time for the Week in Review quiz, that opportunity to prove to everyone else how much useless knowledge you remember about the computer industry. This week's question is about Digital Equipment Corporation, that titan of the 70s and 80s that owned the mini and microcomputer market for a while. Eventually, of course, it was eaten by Compaq, which was eaten by Hewlett-Packard, leading to Hewlett-PacPac. However, during their heyday, they had quite a few popular computer lines, including the Alpha and Vax. But their earliest computers all started with the letter PDP. For example, the PDP-11, which was used to develop some of the early versions of Unix, and my favorite, the PDP-8, one of the first computers I ever developed software for. So our question this week is, what exactly did PDP stand for? If you think you know, send the answer to podquiz@oreilly.com. That's podquiz@oreilly.com. If you're the first person to get us the right answer, you'll have your choice of any book in the current O'Reilly catalog. Well, that's it for O'Reilly Week in Review. We hope you've enjoyed this little tour de O'Reilly, and we look forward to seeing you next time. And next time, you can expect to hear about an interview we're going to do with Dr. Josh Werman, who chases tornadoes in a Doppler radar for fun. We'll also have an article next week on that spunky new language, Haskell. Until then, this is James Turner for O'Reilly Media.